69. Marcus. Marcus blinked, slowly focusing on the flickering flames before him, his nose filled with the scent of sweat and smoke, his ears with the crackle pop of pine sap burning. Everything hurt. From his head to the tips of his obviously frostbitten toes, his body was an aching mass of pain, but worse than that was the fog in his head, his mind sluggish and disorientated, like he'd been drugged, but somehow worse.
Tariana.
He could barely get the word out, his tongue thick and his throat feeling as though it had been scoured by sandpaper. I'm here. Her voice came from above him, and Marcus realized his head was in her lap, her hands stroking his hair. Shifting, he looked up, her face swimming in and out of focus.
What happened?
Nothing. She gave him a tight smile. Everything is fine. Have a drink of water. His muscles protested as she helped him sit and put a tin cup of warm water into his hand. He drank it greedily, and she filled it again from the kettle sitting next to the flames. There were bandages wrapped around her palms, and her fingers were marked with nicks and cuts, moving stiffly. He sipped at the water and looked around the small cave, the space entirely unfamiliar.
Where are we? How did I get here?
Can we talk about it later? She asked. I really need to sleep. His mind was sharpening, clear enough now to notice that her eyes were the color of stagnant pools, her skin ashen, and every move she made seemed an act of will.
What happened to you?
Please. Tears flooded down her cheeks, a sob tearing from her lips as she lowered herself to the cave floor. I have to sleep. Icy fear built in his gut. And Marcus pulled the blankets that had been covering him over her body, folding one to slip beneath her cheek. She whimpered softly, curling in on herself. What happened? His fear was turning to panic, and he rose on unsteady legs. A flash of memory shot through his head, of stumbling through wind and darkness, Tariana begging him to keep walking, keep breathing, keep living. But before that, there was nothing.
Think. He growled at himself. What is the last thing you remember?
Her face. Her voice as she said, I'm sorry for this, but I refuse to let you die. And then the world fell away. Of their own accord, his fingers went to his belt pouch, digging around the contents, but the vial of painkiller he always kept was gone. She'd drugged him. But why? Tucking the blankets tightly around her shoulders, he pulled aside the weighted tarp blocking the entrance to the cave. Outside, the sun was rising, bright oranges and pinks burning along the horizon, and he eyed the unfamiliar terrain, noting the dense forest in the distance. Except that was impossible. He ignored his aching body and broke into a trot, following a trail. Then he was no longer trotting, but running, sliding to a stop only when he reached the edge of a cliff, across which was strung a single rope. On the far side, the rest of the bridge dangled, and beyond that, the razor-edged mountains of the Cybernese Teeth. She'd carried him, unconscious, the rest of the way across the teeth. A tremble struck him in the knees, and he sat heavily on the ground, staring. It was impossible. Not only was she half-starved and exhausted, she was smaller than he was. And yet the proof was undeniable, as was the toll it must have taken on her. Scrambling back to his feet, Marcus raced back to the cave and ducked inside. Tariana still slept, and when he pressed his fingers against her pulse, it was not half so strong as he'd like. Right now, she needed sleep, but when she woke, she needed to eat, as did he. Hunger from days without food bit into his stomach, and Marcus surveyed the shelter for any sign of supplies. But there was nothing but a few jars containing less than a handful of oats and some crumbs from what looked like jerky. Swearing, he pulled on his discarded hat and mittens, tossed another piece of wood on the fire, then went back out into the cold. His breath misted as he followed the trail down toward the forest, catching sight of a bird flying in the trees, though that was likely a lost cause. He searched for signs of tracks, for signs of any life at all, but the snow was pristine and untouched. And other than the trees, all the plants were dead.
Many of his men probably knew what could be foraged, but he'd been busy learning military strategies and how to kiss the asses of senators while the 37th had been learning to survive anywhere the Senate sent them. And he'd left Tarianna alone long enough. Gathering wood as he walked, he returned to the cave, checked on Tarianna, then bolstered the fire. They weren't far from the edges of civilization. He might be able to walk the distance without food, but there was no chance of Tarianna walking anywhere for at least a day. Even if he built something to carry her, drained as she was, he wasn't sure if she'd be able to survive nights out in the open air. But there was no other choice. Then, out of the corner of his eye, Marcus saw something move. He turned his head in time to see a mouse scurrying across the cave, and he lunged for the creature. But it was much too quick. Pulling a burning twig from the fire, he circled the small space, seeing the cracks and holes that allowed the animal's entrance, along with enough droppings to suggest the mouse wasn't alone. They rarely were. All he needed to do was catch them. Marcus gathered the supplies he needed and set up the traps, the knowledge of how to do so a relic from his training or a book, he couldn't recall which. After carefully baiting the trap with some jerky crumbs, he moved to the far side of the fire to sit next to Tarianna. Hours passed, and he must have dozed off, but then a loud bang jerked him awake. Crawling over to the block of wood, he lifted it, grinning at the sight of the dead mouse. "Let's hope you have a large family," he said, picking it up by the tail. And then he rigged the trap once more.